Discussions with Ajahn Suchin, Bangkok, October 2009. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Jonathan, Sarah, Robert, Suchin, Azita, Betty, and other friends.
I have a few questions on Sila, and I would like to start reading a bit from a letter from a friend to you. This is the Polish friend that last time you'll remember Nina read some of his questions. So when we said we were coming this time, he asked me to raise some more. So I'll do a little bit at a time. Dear Ajahn, you are my greatest friend and teacher. Since I've met you, a lot of things didn't change. My sila is not better. Actually, it's
because
not...
Because it's doing his sila.
Right.
Thinking about oneself, well, listening to Dhamma is to know that there is no self at all. And I can't imagine why people keep on thinking about the progress, or I still like the same person as years before, months before, like that.
Right.
Not thinking about anything, because it's conditioned.
Yes.
It's conditioned each moment, and it's gone completely all the time.
But I guess this accumulation, attachment to self is...
I think that usually no one think about oneself, how much I get better in understanding or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with that at all, because the eyes see, the seeing sees, and thinking about what is seen, that's all in the day.
You mean that they haven't heard about the Dhamma, they don't think about
it? I think that anyone who heard about Dhamma, usually, like before, we do not think much about oneself. Like, how much I know today, something like that. See? Is that right? Or
I don't think I understand, Ajahn. Sorry, could you say again?
Because you see that usually do you always keep on thinking about how much I understand this or that better and better than normally no. So
are you saying that when it's like that normally, why suddenly when it comes to Dhamma we start thinking so much about
right.
self?
Mm-hmm.
Why suddenly self-obsessed? But perhaps he's saying that even if he's not thinking about his self, and why do I have so much akusala or whatever, perhaps he's saying that, oh, well, it just happens that there is a lot of akusala in the day, even if I don't think about it as my akusala.
It's different from thinking about the progress. People wish to have something from listening, and a lot, not just little by little, understanding.
And wanting to get something out of it quickly.
Yeah.
Because then he goes on to say, I don't have kusala when I want to have. Still all the same life, the same Lucas who's involved in all this daily life, akusala. But one thing changed since I've met you, my misery dukkha became weaker, that's for sure.
Mm.
But it's still, you know, wanting to have more sati, wanting to have less akusala. So would you say that this obsession with self and progress is the hindrance or the reason why there is so much akusala and difficulty in the day?
And I think that we shouldn't think about the result at all or the progress at all. What is thinking? The I again.
But isn't it just part of how the understanding gradually develops?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because slowly we begin to understand that it's more important to understand causes than results.
Instead of thinking about I have akusala at moment of seeing, it's only Dhamma at that moment. Instead, because we have heard about Dhamma reality, so instead of thinking that I have akusala, thinking about akusala instead of that is a reality, a Dhamma. That is like the medicine for those who would like to have lots of kusala instead of akusala, like that sentence.
I think it seems to depend on different accumulations, because you know, for some of us, when we hear the Dhamma or start to study the Dhamma, there isn't all this obsession with my results, or how can I have more? But for some people, it seems that it's much stronger, always wanting to have some results. So maybe it's just different accumulations.
I don't think that. I never think about that.
No.
So I'm surprised why people keep on thinking about this. Just listening, understanding, that's all. Yeah. Akusla is akusla, it's gone. Yeah.
Well, I think it's very easy to think about progress and results and so forth. I think it's very easy, especially when one, at the beginning, gets interested in Dhamma, to
what
think
about,
very much about progress, results.
This is very subtle. I haven't yet understood the subtlety of it yet. So read more and think more and know more, that's all. Yeah.
Perhaps there's a kind of mana too, that they, you know, are comparing with other people or other progress or something, I don't know.
No idea at all. I think that every come, like go to school and listen to the teacher, mathematics or English, and then that's all. Just like that.
Let go. Yeah. To carry on a bit, I know about Four Noble Truths a bit, and I know how it's against what we're used to thinking. This is the way in different direction to the way we think. It's surprising. But I grieve because my sila gets weaker from day to day. My kusala seems to persecute me, and I feel like it's growing more and more. Mana, that is pride, also don't give me rest.
I know now why. Because usually everywhere he went might urge him a lot to get result by doing this and that. So when he went to any place to listen to Dhamma or practice, he just would like to get as much as he could. Mm-hmm. So he thinks that by coming here and listen, it should be that way too. But actually it's not. It's the way to eliminate misunderstanding and ignorance.
I think it's doubt that is the problem.
He wants more result.
Yeah, definitely.
You mean lack of confidence?
Lack of confidence and doubt about what is right.
Instead of understanding what he has accumulated, so that it's time to see what conditioned such and such moment as not self. But he thinks about himself so much that he takes all for mine. So he got upset.
I see, whatever his reasons, the truth is the truth, the answer is the answer. So
and it's not his. But only a conditioned reality.
At your time, he sometimes talks exactly this way about this thing. Very nice answers he gives to other people with what I perceive as very great confidence, satta, in the teachings.
Yes.
His understanding is very good. So,
If it's real satta, it will bring more understanding about not self. It's satta for him to be good, but when time comes when it's not as good, he got upset.
Yeah. And just at the end of this paragraph, and then I'll just leave it at this, do a little bit each day. Sometimes I think that maybe the way now with you, Nina, Pradhamadara and others, is not a good way. I feel like, this is what I mean, it's some doubt. I feel like living on the edge, but be honest, I can't change this. I can't start sila when I want sila. But why I have so much akusala and dosa that leads to akusala kamapata? What if I'm agitated on account of Dharma? What if this agitation doesn't help Dharma? I feel like no way out from my misery.
Those are realities. To be known.
And that's the bitter medicine. It's kind of like comparing, oh, other people don't have this problem, it's only me, or but it's just again more thinking.
Instead of thinking about teachers and people, what about reality? Whether he get a little and a little understanding with the right conditions. But when it's not conditions, avijja is there, hinder the understanding instantly. So when he understand more about realities, he would understand that there is no I at all. That's why Buddha taught a lot about realities.
I've been having discussions with one or two people who quote suttas about skillful virtues leading step by step to arahatship. And of course I've been saying that it has to be sila with right understanding from the beginning, otherwise of course it won't lead to arahatship. And they quote paragraphs such as this one by Bhikkhu Bodhi, who says, "The vigor of the spiritual life, like the vigor of a tree, depends on healthy roots, just as a tree with weak and shallow roots cannot flourish but will grow up stunted, withered and barren. So a spiritual life devoid of strong roots will have a stunted growth incapable of bearing fruit. To attempt to scale the higher stages of the path, it's essential at the outset to nourish the proper roots of the path. Otherwise, the result will be frustration, disillusionment, and perhaps even danger. The roots of the path are the constituents of sila, the factors of moral virtue. These are the basis for meditation, the ground for all wisdom and higher achievement." And my comment was that, again, the sila has to be accompanied by panya. Otherwise, there will be no detachment from the idea of self. Who has or doesn't have sila, it will all be taken for my sila that one's trying to have. So it seems to be similar to Lucas's comments, the concern with having sila first and trying to have sila first.
What root for him is strong? There are three roots.
Yes, for him he's saying the root that has to be strong is
yes, sila. But what root? There are three roots. So yes. What root is wrong? He said about the three roots.
Yes.
Okay. Which but one is strong?
Yes. Well, he's saying sila.
Is sila root or lobha dosa moha?
Right. Okay. Roots. Right. Right. Lobha dosa moha.
And so moha is there. Mm-hmm. Very weak. How come it to be strong?
Just talk about roots. Yeah.
Strong roots.
Yeah.
Okay, but
yeah.
Which one?
Yeah.
And so how can it become strong?
Right. So when he says the roots of the path are the constituents of sila, well, actually, you can't say alobha dosa amoha.
Who has the virtue of sila? Only five.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
See. Only five.
Mm. So to be saying that in these examples, that these persons, they don't really have a correct idea of the function of panya and its value.
That when they study Dhamma, they think for themselves, not for understanding, that there is no self at all. So they study with the idea of how can I become better in sila, so forth, and kusala, see? Not pay attention to understanding, Dhamma as Dhamma.
So you're saying that the arguments is not actually making a statement about the importance of sila so much, but something that is an excuse so that they can do what they want to do.
It has to understand reality, not just to have better sila. See, one thing about having better sila, what about understanding reality?
When I think about, reflect on panya, I can see that that's the leader. I mean, from beginning to end. the most important factor is panya to be developed.
But so this is about sila.
Yes, so they're highlighting and giving importance to sila, and panya. Almost like without not taking into consideration or not knowing that panya, how the role of panya in the development of wisdom.
Panya for them is his or her or my panya.
They don't understand what panya is.
They do not study Dhamma. They study something for themselves, to get something more and more for themselves, just for themselves, to have better sila and so on.
A friend quoted this a sutra about step by step sila, da da da, arahatship, and then this paragraph of Bhikkhu Bodhis, and I made the comment about otherwise there's no detachment from the idea of self who has or doesn't have sila. And another friend, Phil, who's asked you many questions before, this was his reply to my comment. Again, I can't understand why you are talking about detachment path moments when other people are talking about step-by-step sila as laid out, for example, in an Anguttara Sutta, which says, if there is no sense control or monks, then the basis for virtue is destroyed for one who lacks sense control. If there's no virtue, then the basis for right concentration is destroyed for one who lacks virtue, and so on, for knowledge and vision of things as they really are, i.e. the kind of panya you love to write about. You've seen this sutta 100 times and dodged it 100 times, and it will go on and on. So that's the end of the first paragraph. So he's saying that our answers about the importance of panya and detachment from the idea of self is avoiding what is clearly said in suttas, such as this one about virtue, then concentration, then wisdom, or this one, which someone else just quoted, skillful virtues have freedom from remorse as their purpose and under, and freedom from remorse as their reward. And what is the purpose of freedom from reward? What is its reward? Joy, rapture, serenity, pleasure, concentration, knowledge and vision of things as they are, and so on and so on. And they say, well, it all starts with sila, and that we are ignoring this.
Sila is the manner of speech and deeds, right?
Yeah.
Many people have sila, good speech and deeds, without understanding.
Yeah.
And some people have good deeds and speech with understanding.
Yeah.
Which is better?
Yes. Obvious. Yes. And then he goes on to say, there are many suttas that make it clear that virtue and then the kind of deep wisdom you aspire to are not always found together. The most obvious examples are the ones in which the Buddha teaches the deep teachings to listeners only when he has determined that their minds are ready for them. See, for example, the Anguttara Sutta, the household agga. With trusting heart, I then waited upon the Blessed One, and the Blessed One gave me gradual instruction, namely a talk on giving, on virtue, on the heavens, on the danger, vanity, and impurity of sensual pleasures. When the Blessed One saw that my mind was prepared, susceptible, free of hindrances, elevated and lucid, he then revealed to me the Dharma instruction particular to the Buddhas, namely suffering, its origin, and so on. Now, where in the teachers that came above, before the Dharma instruction particular to the Buddhas, do you suppose sila accompanied by panya and the other path factors, otherwise there would be no detachment from the idea of self, comes in? Of course it doesn't, but Suchinists, and not only Suchinists, must have their way to forage deep into the deepest of teachings, took to sweet, but it's not the Buddha's way. So what he's saying is, in these suttas, such as this one, in the sutra itself, it's made clear that people had already developed or been taught about dana, virtue, and the heavens, and only then, when they were ready, they were taught about the noble truths and satipatthana. So that often in these suttas, when sila is given first, it's not accompanied by panya.
So for him, he just cares to have sila without panya.
He thinks that deep paniya is such a higher level, and the most important thing at the beginning is to get the foundation straight, so that there's no akusala.
And what is the beginning of paniya? And when is the beginning of paniya? When, where, and what is the beginning of paniya? And when citta is kusala, can he say what level or what kind, what type of kusala it is, when there is no action, deeds and speech yet? What is that? Kusala citta? Sila or what?
Yeah.
See, they don't understand that even a moment of kusala is sila already,
mm-hmm.
before there is deeds and speech. It doesn't mean that when there is understanding, there is no sila. Right at that time, kusala citta arises. It's not that at level of dana, but at level of, we can say, samatha and vipassana, even when it just begins.
When it just begins.
To understand reality. Otherwise, there is nowhere to begin the understanding at all.
So when the suttas refer to, or like in this gradual teaching, when it refers to the Buddha giving a talk, first of all, on giving and then virtue and so on. So you would say even at the beginning, there has to be beginning of understanding.
Yeah,
that's
how
yeah.
it sounds to me. Talking about giving.
Otherwise, how can it
be? He understands giving
yeah.
at that level.
Yes.
Then he understands Siddha.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about understanding.
And is it about understanding at that level, level of samatha or satipatthana from the beginning?
It depends.
Okay.
Because you see that when one does not get angry with anyone, it's calm.
Mm.
We can say samatha.
Mm.
And when it arises more and more and more, the calm appears as calmness.
Mm.
See? So they don't understand the reality of what they say about sila and panya and words and speech and beginning. See?
But we can't say that, for example, at the beginning when there's a talk on giving, on virtue, so there has to be some understanding, even if it's at the level of samatha.
At least there must be the understanding of kusala moment.
Understanding of kusala, but we can't say at the beginning that it's necessarily the beginning of satipatthana.
Don't have to call it sila or samatha or anything. It depends on understanding.
What kind of understanding. Yeah. But not necessarily any understanding of realities.
Because you see that this is the talk about the stages of understanding dana and sila and sakha and nekama and ariyasaccha.
Yes.
Without understanding, how come to the ariyasaccha, the Four Noble Truths?
So it has to, even at the beginning, be some understanding of realities, even because...
Otherwise, how to start begin?
So there has to be a beginning of detachment from self at the beginning, otherwise it can't.
By understanding kusala as kusala, akusala as akusala, the danger of akusala, and the benefit of having no akusala.
Even if nothing is understood about namas and rupas, it's...
We don't have to call it nama and rupa. For example, when at this moment, do we have to say that seeing is nama? But the characteristic or the reality of it cannot be rupa because it experiences.
So at the beginning, when there's beginning of understanding about giving and virtue, what I'm saying is even those who had never heard the Buddha's teachings can have a beginning of understanding of giving and virtue and developing samatha, but they have no beginning of detachment from any idea of self. So when the Buddha gives a talk on giving and virtue at the beginning, is there any beginning of detachment from the idea of self?
Usually when we read about this where the Buddha taught and the person who listened became sotapanna, without the accumulation of right understanding, how can impossible. How could that person be?
Without using any special words, and the implication is that there is a beginning of understanding of namas and rupas, or seeing invisible objects.
Listen to Asachi. No word with nama and rupa at all. But nama and rupa is there at any time of talking about dhamma.
I mean, one thing for sure, it's not about doing, which is what Phil is talking about, right? He's talking about you have to do that and do see that. Yeah, you have to be involved in those.
Yeah. Well, it all comes back to that experience he mentioned about, because he was listening to the discussions a lot and had a lot of confidence, he thought, in understanding namas and rupas and living life naturally and following one's inclinations but developing more understanding. And then he had a bad experience when he went back to Canada and got into a lot of trouble and was a lot of akusala karma pata or whatever. And he says, what was responsible was this wrong understanding he had when he used to listen to you and us about just developing naturally. So now he's...
Expectation.
Which shows that he had attachment to results from the beginning, that time and now. And maybe this is relevant.
And that's the same with the Lucas and the other friends, so it's actually a similar point.
What you brought up on Saturday about... Kunkev asked about two kinds of understanding about Kama Vipaka. Perhaps in this case, when the Buddha talked about Dana Siddha, it was also understanding about Kama and Vipaka.
We don't know people who listened to Buddha at that time, but they must have a lot of panya accumulated. Otherwise, how could they come to see Buddha and listen and be came to Tathapanna or whatever level?
Because dana is kama. So anyone who values dana...
This is only expecting about the others while they are listening to the teaching. What about oneself at this moment? Before understanding reality, they are all self. But actually, when there is the talk about kusala, and anyone who can understand kusala as not self can understand. But anyone who cannot understand kusala as not self, that person takes kusala as self. So it depends on who listens.
Sarah, you're probably wondering what I just brought up this Saturday.
And the expectations of others, I didn't
get. The thing is, Kunkia brought up from the Thai talks about, it was mentioned two levels of understanding. One was about kama and vipaka. The other was labeled as vipassana understanding. So I was wondering, why classify it this way? And then Achan talked about whenever there's a moment of understanding about realities, then at that moment it's having an understanding about kama and vipaka. That's it. So that's what I wonder. When you're hearing about dana, the person is possible that there's understanding about cause and effect. So that it's understanding.
That's developing. Because it can only actually really be understood by insight, wisdom.
So two levels. So we're talking about mundane. It was mundane level. When it's more intellectual, some idea about cause and effect when we hear, at the level of hearing, when we sort of reflect on lopa, we know that it's kama, and we seeing is vipaka. So that's beginning of understanding about cause and effect. So that's one level, and the other is the vipassana level, that's the yanas.
Because you see that seeing, we don't have to call it vipaka. And thinking, we don't have to call it kusala or akusala. But by understanding with awareness at that moment, the difference between the two, one can understand better without naming it as this is this and that is that, different.
Yes.
And when we use the term, that is vipaka, because it's conditioned by such conditions, and when it's thinking, it's not like that. So it's not just the word, it's the moment of understanding the reality which is vipaka, without naming it at all.
But wouldn't you say that even, for example, pariyati, understanding of seeing and thinking, is a level of understanding of karma and vipaka?
Sure, theoretically.
Okay.
But what about this moment? See, the understanding of seeing is different from moment of understanding thinking, because seeing is not thinking. One can see different realities more and more and more, so one knows better about not naming it as the kusla, akusla, vipaka, or kriya.
But I think that in the gradual instruction, when the it says the Buddha talked about dana and then sila and so on, I don't think that there's any suggestion, for example, in the commentary, that by talking about dana, he was actually talking about or expecting his audience to understand about karma and vipaka. I think it's more just about.
He knew the people he talked to,
what they could appreciate,
accumulations enough to understand and to become
to understand
enlightened.
Them.
Or become enlightened.
Yes. And when we read
and no doubt when anyone who has developed understanding enough, no matter what he listened to, can bring a moment of understanding of reality of any degree. So it doesn't depend on the word or the story. It depends on the development of understanding about sound, voice, or citta, cetasika at that moment without naming or even thinking about the term and the word. It's nama or it's reality. Otherwise, people might doubt how when Buddha talked about chataka and people became enlightened.
Yes.
Not any word about dana and sila and sakha and nekamma and ariya satcha.
Right. Just about using conventional terms the and stories.
That's what Mike is suggesting when actually what he is talking, when he's saying that Kenneth is taking a bit too far, and he thinks that some of this conventional, some of the, what they call it? Sikha or something, was what conditioned enlightenment in a lot of people. And I'm still wondering that if these people hadn't heard about nama and rupa, how could, for example, talk about, in the conventional sense, about, say, sila, bring about enlightenment? If the person had, in that life, not heard about nama and rupa.
About previous life?
Yes, I understand that. But how would the attention, for example, be drawn to realities? Because ultimately, it's the insight into realities that's what.
Don't they need to hear about realities again?
That life, right. Never heard the word nama and rupa, or even khandhas.
They just hear the jhaka about
harita. At the end, it's about the ariya satcha.
Mm-hmm. So So would that be with all cases? I mean, they would also have some inkling about, maybe they would have heard about khandhas, for example.
You mean like Sariputta listened to Asashi?
Yes, I was thinking on the way here, the word Dhamma itself, what did it mean to Sariputta? Because he wouldn't have known that Dhamma was...
Only a few words.
Yes, just a few words.
Yeah. And,
all
dhammas. Ah. Yeah. So he understands Dhamma. Yeah.
Well, his question is...
Using the term Dhamma, all, now is all.
Now is all, but the all for some uninstructed is all of convention, all of...
Yes, but for him, it means more than just convention.
That's what I'm wondering, but before hearing, he didn't know that. Before hearing those exact words, he didn't know
he
that.
Had lots of accumulation just to listen to the truth, no matter in what words are aware of words. Or here, he can understand visible object. And thinking, see.
But he, that seems like to sound as if he would have to know the difference, at least theoretically, between visible object and thinking.
Because someone might doubt when we ask, what do you see? But for Sariputta, no doubt.
What before hearing, he would have thought he saw people and things.
What is seeing? See, he knew exactly what is seen.
That was before or after hearing?
Right then, what is seen, see?
Okay, what is seen? Right. Yeah, right. All tamas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just one word is enough for him. But this comes back to the discussion we were having with Ken H. He quoted you as having said, and there's a discussion about whether this is correct, the Buddha taught Satipatthana, and every word of his teaching is to be understood in terms of Satipatthana. Is this correct?
Because you see, without citta, can there be pandati?
No.
So each word at that moment which is heard can be citta accompanied by panya. It does mean that only the word without meaning or understanding, any word is heard. So, panya is there, which understands what is reality.
So whether it's various words like in the Jataka, it's understood in terms of paramattha.
Otherwise, without word, who can understand anything? But it does mean that understand that word is real, but at that moment, what is real? At moment of having heard words.
Robert's reply to this was that he thought this quote was misleading. He didn't agree with it. And he said that he had cited sections of the Tipitaka to you where you say that this is not directly about Satipatthana. For example, one was the Sutta to Sigala and the section where the Buddha recommended not sauntering in the streets at unseemly hours and frequenting theatrical shows, indulgence in gambling which causes heedlessness. She, Kunsu Chin, said if people are not yet ready for Satipatthana, then Buddha would teach in a way that prepared them for later insight. What Su Chin is saying is that the Buddha's teaching is all about Satipatthana Anatta, or preparing the soil for Satipatthana, but she doesn't claim every word in the Tipitaka is about Satipatthana.
Can anyone become enlightened while listening to this?
While listening to these words?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. If the accumulations are there, yes.
But for those who do not have accumulation enough, no way to become enlightened when there is not enough accumulation.
So we can say from this point of view that not only whatever we read in the Tipitaka, but whatever we read or hear anywhere is actually about Satipatthana.
For those who have accumulated.
And what about for those who don't?
They have to develop.
But develop what? Can it be
understanding, little by little.
Can it be unrelated to understanding of Satipatthana?
People cannot understand Satipatthana directly, instantly at all. It takes time.
Yes, but then that does not mean that the Buddha would have taught those people anything less than the development of wisdom.
Taught everything at any every level to develop.
Right.
With right understanding. Those who believe must have right understanding, seeing the value or the advantages of his teachings.
Does it have to be that with the understanding that it's not self? For example, as self brought up, the danger of gambling.
The not self is not easy to understand.
Right.
It takes time.
So
it doesn't mean that as soon as one hear, one can understand. That is Sariputta.
So in this case, it can be understanding maybe of the danger of akusla.
Any level.
Depending on the listener. Mm-hmm. But what the Buddha talks about is all kinds of kusala, akusala, all kinds of dharmas. And just depends on the listener what they can hear or understand. Mm-hmm. But the implication is Satipatthana is always implied, anatta is always implied, but whether people understand it or not.
No, because I'm having this discussion with Mike, and what he just wrote today, which I haven't read properly, but what I got out of it was that he is saying that sometimes certain teachings can be understood at levels that have nothing to do with right understanding, right view. In fact, he goes on to say that the development along the path is not only about some form. He says some forms of bhavana is other than Satipatthana, and
I think that he misunderstood the meaning of bhavana. Each moment now is bhavana.
But it must be with right understanding.
Yes, because now we are talking about realities to have more understanding. That is bhavana. It does mean to sit or to do.
Right, but Mike, he says that the Buddha taught not everything is about the development of Satipatthana, and not every kind of
because
development.
Because you see that before there can be the development of Satipatthana, there must be the development of understanding reality to be conditioned for Satipatthana.
Right. He makes the same thing. That not everything is related to the development of understanding.
Why?
I don't know.
He talked about the development of kusala, all forms, all levels of kusala,
right. So what he's
to be conditioned
is that
for.
Sometimes those are important, and sometimes the Buddha actually taught other forms of kusala. Because that was also necessarily part of
to
the path.
Understand Satipatthana.
So there
in
is
the
a
end.
Relationship between kusala without panya and kusala with panya.
Yeah.
In a way that the kusala without panya leads to kusala
with panya and on and on.
Okay.
The development doesn't mean just one moment. Or only one kind of kusala.
So
the same point about sila first or other kinds of kusala first, and other
and
kind
not
of
everything
kusala.
Is about satipatthana.
Right, the same point is what this is what everyone objects to. Suggesting that everything
what about those who do not want to develop satipatthana or panya, but they just want to have sila? So they listen to that level.
They will listen and hear that level, even though the Buddha was talking about another level and meant to his audience
as
to understand.
As much as he or she can
that
get, it's only that
agrees,
level.
That everyone agrees. But so you're saying is that for those who understood at that level, for them, it was part of the path in the long run.
Go higher than that.
But it's still part of what will be maybe a barami or barami.
Accumulation. As long as there is no right understanding yet, it's impossible just to think that there is no self. Because they have the idea of self all the time.
What Mike is saying is that sila without panya is part of the path.
And what that person can get is only that, not more than that, only sila.
Just like someone who's never heard the Buddha's teachings are saying, they can get more sila, more dana, but...
Of course, in those cases we might argue that they would need to hear the Dhamma, and that's what's missing. You know, but in those who do, in one lifetime or the other, get to hear the Dhamma, the accumulated kusala, that is without panya, is a support to what they've already accumulated in terms of panya. But is it that way? I don't know.
And the point of listening is sila as well, not dana.
Well, the question is for someone who has listened but doesn't really appreciate anything about satipatthana, but still the conditions to listen, will the accumulation or the growth of sila and dana be a support for satipatthana later? Very indirectly. And this leads to a question of kinaches, which is the opposite. Consider, for example, Dio Paticca Samuppada. I've learned here that paticca samuppada, regardless whether it's kusala or akusala karma, is virtually the same in the sense that one remains in the cycle of samsara. In the absence of right understanding, karma of either sort is simply not the way out. So why would the Buddha have taught anything without satipatthana? We often say, well, unless it's the growth of vipassana, it's just building more bricks in samsara. So in that sense, what's important is just the development of understanding, whether it's kusala or akusala, and in that sense it doesn't really matter very much whether at this moment it's a moment of kindness or a moment of meanness, because they're just conditioned dharmas, and in itself it's not the way out and it's not a direct support for satipatthana.
So the question is whether...
So does it, if it's not a moment of right understanding of reality or the beginning of understanding of realities, does it matter at all whether at this moment it's the citta is kusala or akusala, because they're just conditioned dharmas in the cycle of samsara.
But what about self?
Well, if there's no understanding of realities as not self, whether it's kusala or akusala, they're both being taken for self.
So
it doesn't really matter whether it's kusala or akusala.
And this taking realities for self doesn't matter.
Right. It's the hindrance, right?
Yeah, if you look at this way, that jhana chittas can be taken for self very easily, and if there's no right understanding, that's what it will end up be taken, you know.
Right. Well, at least when there are jhana cittas or moments of dana or sila, even if there's no understanding, you could say it's a very indirect support for the development of satipatthana, but at least at those moments there's no moha or ditti, and moha or ditti are the hindrances. So at least at those moments of dana and sila, it may not be directly useful, but at least it's not hindering the path. Can one put it like that?
Without understanding, can anyone end up the circle of birth and death?
No. So actually Ken's point was by saying that, well, whether it's kusala or akusala, if there's no understanding, it cannot end the cycle. So therefore, by teaching paticca samuppada, it actually shows that the entire teaching is about satipatthana, because otherwise it doesn't have any point.
And citta, which listen, each word can be object of understanding.
So even if the Buddha was just having friendly greetings with someone, or even if he was talking about the weather or asking after someone's baby, actually it's about satipatthana for those who can discern.
Those are satipatthana when sati arises. Otherwise, Buddha himself will hinder those persons by saying those words.
Yeah. So, of course, we know in the Buddha's case, he always knew exactly what was best for everyone to hear and understood everyone's tendencies and latent tendencies and everything. So even if he was just giving a friendly greeting or asking about a baby, it was about satipatthana for those who could hear. But for other people who are not the Buddha,
who don't understand, try not to talk to anyone.
Right, or don't speak about babies or something. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to talk about anything that's not about the Dharma, like about gardens or babies, then in the end, one's not responsible for the other's cheetahs. So in that sense, one could say whatever anyone speaks about, or whatever one reads, or whatever one hears, not just the Buddha, it's anything, is about satipatthana.
Can be object of satipatthana. Anytime.
But there's a difference. Can be and is. When talking about babies, is talking about babies. It's not talking about nama rupa, so you're communicating something in a conventional sense.
It is, if it's not citta, cetasika, and rupa.
Yes, when we're talking about, ultimately they're only cittas, cetasika, and rupa, but we're talking about what's being communicated when.
So you mean that when one develops a satipatthana, shouldn't talk about this?
No, that's what I'm saying. We can talk conventionally about so many things. We need to talk about.
Because it can be moment of satipatthana.
Mm-hmm. For the speaker or the listener.
Right.
Naturally.
So are you saying that when the Buddha, for example, if you mentioned babies, it was a condition for the person to have satipatthana?
If that person does not know anything about satipatthana, can there be satipatthana no matter what he talks about? Kaya, citta, vedana, if that person doesn't understand anything at all.
Right. And so is
that. But if that person understands, he could say anything.
Which could
be satipatthana. Anytime.
So the question is, would the Buddha have been talking about anything, conventional things, to a person who could not understand satipatthana?
What for?
I think that's what Ken is saying. He wouldn't have any other purpose but to condition understanding in the other person.
When he went to the potter's place resident, didn't he say anything to him?
Yes. So he did. So he would talk to the potter himself, but not with the expectation that the potter understood.
But the question is like when he went to the potter's place, you know, he had a purpose. He knew that the potter would be able to appreciate the Dharma in a particular way by staying.
At that time, Buddha stayed there to meet the king.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. But it just happened that he would know the accumulations and
no expectation for the potter to understand anything, but he talked to him.
This is the Pukkusati.
The Pukkusati. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the king?
King Pukkusati.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Right. As I was saying the other day, Ivan was actually arguing similar to Kenich. I mean, for that position, and it sounded almost like he was making conventional talk a problem, concepts a problem, you know, and it shouldn't be.
But when you say, well, the Buddha had no expectations of him, but he would know even at that moment when he met the potter, he would know whether he would
whether he could stay there.
I see.
Obviously, it's great kusala vipaka for the potter to have the Buddha stay, so presumably there's been some...
No expectation.
Yeah.
Okay, Ken H. goes on in this one to say, if an animal, a dog for example, had walked up to the Buddha, would he have encouraged it simply to have good behaviour? I suppose the answer is yes.
About dog.
He says, to my way of thinking, it's quite conceivable that the Buddha would never have entered into any discussion for purely mundane purposes. But
sounds a bit idealistic.
Yeah, yeah. So just kusala chittas, that's all.
Kriya
chittas. And then he says another suggestion has been that the Buddha sometimes taught dana and sila without punya as an interim measure, intending to tie them in with punya later. I suppose I can accept that, but do we believe in later? Isn't it only the present aramana suitable for right understanding? So would the Buddha have taught dana and sila without punya, intending to tie it into punya later? Would he have had this long-term idea? But isn't it just the present moment?
What should we start when we meet people?
Just a friendly greeting? Or... So not necessarily any expectation about later, just kriya chittas, kusala chittas. I think we said something like this, and the comment was, why waste a single moment? If the student, the listener, could die before the next talk or the present reality could fall away without being understood, why would the Buddha waste time talking about anything rather than an understanding of realities if that person has the accumulation to
know
hear
better than him?
And he goes on to say, my theory, for what it's worth, is that the Buddha stayed around in the world purely to teach Satipatthana and Vipassana. He said, listen, there are only dharmas, there are ultimately no people, no tooth sticks. So I want you to understand everything I say, no matter how bane or some of it may sound, with that in mind. There was a discussion before from the Vinaya about monks using tooth sticks and whether
the Buddha was just talking about hygiene and importance of taking care of one's teeth, or whether really there was a deeper message and it was really about Satipatthana. But
can that woman or object or the word be object of Satipatthana?
Yes. So again, depends on the listener.
I was reading in the Savaya Paramatta Dhammas this morning, and it said in the Atisalani that it states, Gama Vacharad Gusla Jitta, accompanied by pleasant feeling associated with Panya, Asankarika, or in the Pali, Somanasa Sahagatam Jnana Sampayutam Asankarika, is classified as one type among the eight types of Gama Vacharad Gusla Jitta. It's one type, but endless variety among beings. And I'm just wondering, can you explain what is meant by endless variety?
Different levels of panya.
And different degrees of jetasikas too, like sata, not the same degree.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought that's probably what it was.
Okay. Can we come back to the tooth stick? Wasn't the Buddha, when talking about tooth stick, also telling people how to clean teeth?
What is useful? He talks about anything which is useful. And anytime you talk about
toothpick,
I think of toothpick.
Toothpicks.
I have to think over it.
I was going to make a mistake in writing a tooth stick.
It's wood, anyway.
We also had this example. The development of Satipatthana is exclusively the teaching of the Buddha, and thus it is implied in all parts of the scriptures, also when not expressly mentioned. In the discourse with Dhananjani, Sariputta taught the Brahmin Dhananjani when he was sick about the meditations which are the Brahma Viharas. With these Brahma Viharas, when they're developed, jhana can be attained. However, jhana is not the goal. And the Buddha said to Sariputta, why did you, Sariputta, although there was something further to be done, having established Dhananjali only in the less, in the Brahma world, rise from your seat and depart? And Sariputta said, it occurred to me, Lord, these Brahmins are very intent on the Brahma world. Suppose I were to show the Brahmin Dhananjali the way to companionship with Brahma. The Buddha says, Sariputta, the Brahmin Dhananjali has died and has uprisen in the Brahma world. So here it seems to be implying that whenever possible, if a person had the accumulations to develop Satipatthana, they should directly be taught Satipatthana. But Venerable Bodhi gave a note remarking that in this case the Buddha knew that Dhananjali had the potential for enlightenment, therefore he gently rebuked Sariputta. However, in another sutta, the Subha Sutta, he only taught the Brahma Viharas, knowing that Subha had accumulations for the path to the company of Brahma. Thus, the Buddha knew what to teach to whom. So on some occasions, he knew someone was not ready or could not hear about Satipatthana. Maybe all they can hear about is toothpicks. But I think the point is, you would say that even if, in this case, he just taught about the Brahma Viharas only, knowing that that person could only understand to that level, still we could say the teaching is all about Satipatthana, because even if that person couldn't understand about realities, others could then or now. So it's still about depending on the jitas. So many of the bhikkhus around would still have understood, and that discourse on the Brahma Viharas may have been conditioned for others to become arahats at that moment.
Who knows?
That's a nice
better than Buddha, see?
Yeah.
But if you could look at this way, that Sariputta was an arahat, and he knew the value of vipassana, developing right understanding. Yet he taught jhana, which shows that, and knowing, he knows that it is just
limited.
So the difference between him and the Buddha was only that the Buddha knew the accumulations, and so he right. But Sariputta wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
You know, in teaching Kusta at that level.
No, he didn't know the accumulations in the way the Buddha did.
So on this quote attributed to you, that Satipatthana is implied in all parts of the scriptures, also when it is not expressly mentioned, does that include the teaching given to Subha? Satipatthana is still implied because depending...
To those who understand.
Yeah.
When one understands the development of Satipatthana, that person can listen to anything, any word.
So even if the Buddha, like you were saying, just giving the friendly greetings or just talking about the weather, it's about Satipatthana.
It could be the object of right understanding.
So could one say the same for any of the other arahats working down? Could we say Satipatthana is implied in anything they taught the same way because it could be understood? What about when a Sotapanna speaks? Can we say the same, that Satipatthana implied?
No doubt.
Right.
Realities.
Right. And what about someone who has developed some vipassana jnanas but not a Sotapanna? Could one say that Satipatthana is implied in anything?
Because Sotapanna knows about object of right understanding.
But if it's not a Sotapanna, even if it's someone who has developed Satipatthana or has some understanding of vipassana jnanas, can one say Satipatthana?
Satyana, no doubt about object of Satipatthana at all. Otherwise, how can there be conditions for sati to arise at any time of any object?
So if someone has satyajnana, whatever they talk about, even if it's about babies or the weather, Satipatthana is implied.
Otherwise, there would be no talk about all these things.
Yeah.
Just keep quiet.
Which would be
home with the idea itself.
Yeah. And that reminds me, I think it was Ken H. who asked me, I was saying something about satyajnana and the pariyatti that is so firm that it will condition Satipatthana to develop. And his question was, is that just in this life, or is it so firm that in future life it will condition Satipatthana to develop?
If it's not firm, could Sariputta get anything from what Asachi said?
So it has to be so firm in order to appreciate the truth. But of course, when Satyajnana has been developed, one's not going to be a Sariputta as such, but still, if the understanding is firm enough, then whatever is said, no matter it's this life or another life,
that's why reading Tipitaka doesn't mean that everyone can get the understanding according to what Buddha said, because they just take the words and the meanings and the translation. But the person who could get the meaning, the essence, the reality from the teachings
must have accumulated the satyajnana from previous life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it must be firm enough so that when they hear it,
they know what it means.
But there's also kicchayana, which is what I think Sariputta would have developed a lot prior to his previous life. And I think maybe Sarah's talking about something Satyajnana, which is not yet Kittayana, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
For firm understanding,
right,
more
it's,
or less like a,
yeah, it's firm
intellectual understanding.
Yeah.
And so Sariputta, it wouldn't have been just that firm intellectual understanding, it must have been much kichayana as well, isn't it? So can we take Sariputta as an example? What about Satyayana at the intellectual level? How
each,
sure is that?
Each is different. Each individual is different. So how can one make any sense? Yeah.
But also you couldn't have firm Satyayana
without
some, any
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because before you have said that the Satchinyana has to be very firm for
Satipatthana
to arise.
Not
if
turn away from this moment.
If Satchinyana is not firm, then Satipatthana cannot arise, cannot begin to develop. So that would imply
there has to be rounds.
There has to be firm Satchinyana before Kichinyana.
Three rounds for the Four Noble Truths. Altogether 12. It follows all the time, firmer and firmer.
Could you explain the three rounds?
Okay. The Satyayana of the Tukha, Tukha Smutiya, Nirodha, and the Path, 4. And the second one, Gita, 4. And Pativeda, 4, 2.
So from that, one would say that, for example, in Sariputta's case, there had to be very, very firm established Satchinyana, so that when he heard the few words, immediately Kichinyana and Katanyana, realization of the truth. So that would imply that no Satipatthana had been developed at all prior to that.
Impossible. It must have been.
So I think Sukhin's point was that there must have been Satchinyana and Kichinyana before hearing the words.
And where was Sariputta at the time of the Kassapa Sammasambuddha?
Already hearing, already developing Satipatthana.
But probably Kichinyana only limited, which couldn't have, because if it was to the extent that would lead to Katayana, he would have been enlightened already. So,
right, not yet.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah.
This is the old discussion.
And what about the disciples' life, previous life, eons and eons before they can be enlightened?
But then you were saying, using that as an example, of, because my question was, if Satchinyana is firmly developed, but Satipatthana hasn't yet been developed.
Can you say that that is when?
Well, I thought you said that Satchinyana has to be firmly developed before Satipatthana develops.
And what about when they grow around with the Four Noble Truths?
Firm and firm. Firm and firm.
Begin
to okay. Firm. Firm. Degrees of firmness, yes. So it has to be firm for Satipatthana to develop, and then only when Satipatthana develops does it become firm.
Sarah, I'm still confused about what conclusion to make from that, the previous discussion about everything being Satipatthana.
Can this one be Satipatthana?
It can.
So what?
It can.
When the Buddha spoke about mundane matters, was he teaching Satipatthana? Or maybe sometimes
when it's not Lokuttara, it's mundane.
No,
or
I mean,
Lokiya
no,
is mundane.
When he's having everyday conversation with people, like exchanging greeting or asking about matters.
What citta is that?
For him is Kriya-citta.
And for the listener?
Depending on the listener.
Mm-hmm. Even it's the tense of greeting?
Yeah. The question, as I understand it, is, was he teaching Satipatthana at that time?
No, it means that anything can be object of satipatthana.
Right. So that's what I said. From the standpoint of a person who is developing understanding, anything can be the object of satipatthana. But this does not mean that the Buddha was actually only talking about nama and rupa. He was talking about pots and...
But when it says, for example, like it's satipatthana is implied in all parts of the scriptures, even when it's not expressly mentioned, it means for the listener, any word, anything can be understood
right.
In terms of satipatthana. So because the Buddha teaches about satipatthana, even when he's giving friendly greetings, for those who are wise, it is to be understood in
right.
terms of satipatthana.
Yeah. But for the potter, for example, who didn't have the understanding, it was just a hello
right,
or whatever.
Right.
So that's what it was. That's what the Buddha was communicating. Just greetings.
But for us, when we read that greeting, or we read that, it is... It's to, for any listener or any deva at the time, it is to be understood in satipatthana for those who can.
Right.
So it's still about satipatthana.
It's two things. It's from the standpoint of listener and from the standpoint of listener, someone who wouldn't take it. I mean, someone would just take it as a greeting.
Hello. Is that not the reality?
For someone who can understand.
So?
And for someone who can't, it's hello.
It's hello.
Yeah.
It depends.
Buddha actually committed?
Might think that each word Buddha taught about satipatthana, he didn't teach, but they are realities that can be known.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Like now, if you say hen, is it not a reality?
It is.
This is back to the question about whether the Buddha taught sila first. He was interested in passages where the Buddha explicitly refers to the training precepts, sika padana, such as here in the Velama Sutta, in a dialogue with Anathapindika. Though with pious heart he took refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, greater would have been the fruit thereof had he with pious heart undertaken to keep the precepts, sika padana, abstention from taking life, from taking what is not given, from carnal lusts, from lying, and from intoxicating liquor, the cause of sloth. So it's suggesting that he did teach the precepts and did give them some priority.
You mean taking the precepts?
Yes.
Shall we talk about precept with not understanding what precept is?
So again, must it be with understanding what it is?
There are many kinds of precepts too. So what do we mean by this?
Well, talking about the value of abstaining from killing, stealing.
Yeah. Not understanding.
But the value of
understanding about other kinds of precepts too. Indriya Samvara Sila.
Yes.
Parisuddhi Sila. Visuddhi Sila.
Yes, but usually we often talk about Samvara Sila and Visuddhi Sila, but here in this sutta, people will say here he's particularly talking about these five precepts. Because it's Kusala. But again, depending on the listener, how it's understood. Why would it say that greater would have been the fruit thereof, greater than taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, if he had also undertaken the precepts?
With or without understanding?
It would have to be if it's greater.
Or just follow the words, abstain from such and such. No meaning at all, or with lots of understanding of the value or advantage of sila.
But with the same understanding and then taking refuge in Buddhadhamma Sangha.
Yeah. Who?
Well, the same person.
Sotapanna.
I'm just wondering about the relative level of merit.
So it depends on who. But, thinking about that.
Let's say it's...
Anyone or someone or Ariya Ukara?
This is not Ariya.
This is a bit confusing actually, because usually we say the one who has taken refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha is the Sotapanna. So
perfectly.
Perfect.
But okay. When after hearing the teachings, some have the belief in the teachings, so he said that.
Limited. Okay. So if he had also undertaken the precepts perfectly, then he must be the Sotapanna.
That's why people today, in the morning, just sila, panatipata, veramani.
Just recite, huh?
Yeah, recite. I don't know whether that person just recite or take a vow from now on. With intention, with understanding, enough to say that.
Well, Mike's comment on this was that actually all this shows that the Buddha did actually teach people to formally take the precepts, but again, you would say with or without understanding, because if it's just repeating the words, then no use.
Did he just talk and ask people to take precepts in the beginning?
Well, he would say this sutta is an example that shows...
But did Buddha teach and then ask people to take precepts for the beginning?
You mean the beginning of the teachings or the beginning of their practice?
The teachings.
Yes.
Did he ask people to take as beginning?
Okay, so this is like for the Sotapanna or
for anyone who has such intention.
Yeah. Not to be done as as
a
part
practice.
Of part of understanding the teachings as a practice. Not as something to be done.
Not something to start with.
But what about something to be done? At some point, would that be?
Did he ask, or just that he thought?
No, the thing is that it is already showing the difference, dana and sila, and the person who knows the difference, understands the difference. He might be incited to take certain steps. I don't know if there's any steps involved. For example, formally going to the temple to a monk and doing things. Would that be the case sometimes?
There's no record in the suttas of the Buddha suggesting that a person take precepts.
Not say you do or I do, but showing the value of it. And then certain people...
About dana and sila.
So how would you understand Sika Padani, undertaking the precept, this work?
One's own intention.
Okay. Yes, but it still involves certain things to be done.
Not necessarily.
No?
Intention to abstain.
By oneself. Not by anyone's order.
Okay, could that be described as something someone decides to do, if someone does?
After listening to the teachings, like us?
Oh, that was, I think, what you mentioned for the Samadhana Sila, the undertaking with understanding. So the Sika Padani.
After understanding the teachings, do you intend to kill? See, exactly the same. Have no intention to kill. after understanding the teachings about sila?
You just maybe resolve
at that moment
is the citta.
And I think like any other gusala, it does act as some kind of condition, accumulated condition for later on, there to be perhaps conditions for some understanding to arise. It's very tiny, it's teeny, incremental.
Condition for understanding dhammas?
Perhaps.
Or understanding the value of sila.
Understanding the sila.
The value of sila.
Here is another quote that Venerable Somahita gave about the precepts. In this, any noble disciple considers within himself, throughout their life, the arahats avoid all stealing of others' property and abstain from any cheating, always waiting till whatever thing is freely and only openly given, free from any thievish intent, they remain intact and pure, both in mind and moral. May also I, this day and night, avoid all stealing and not cheat anyone. By that I will follow the traits of these perfected arahats. I shall then have observed the upasita observance day perfectly. With this second praxis is the observance day enriched. Observed in this very way, the observance day endowed with 8 features brings high, even divine reward and blessing, and is of sublime dignity and immense greatness. This is Raman Gutra. This is actually referring to understanding the benefit in the arahat's way of life and undertaking to live in a similar way. And when it refers to the upasita observance, I think it can't just mean on that day, but it means just reflecting on that day about the benefit. And this is how you understand it?
Just in the future too.
And in the future, yeah, just understanding the benefit. So, because sometimes it seems that we say, oh, the Buddha didn't teach everyone that they must follow the precepts or whatever, and then people show, well, there are these references to upasita and to precepts, but it's pointing out for those who can understand the benefit, the value of good sila.
The thing is, as we all often say, you must not forget in context of the whole teachings about everything being conditioned.
And this is the point about everything to be understood in terms of Satipatthana. Yes. Yeah. Because it's not a person who undertakes or follows.
Right. So while we're arguing for sila and forgetting that it's conditioned and no self, you're actually not really following.
Yeah, incremental steps to conditions.
Yeah, I mean everything is incremental little steps of conditions.
You know, you can look at it that way. Like any kusala acts as a condition for more kusala at some point later.
Jay, you wanted to ask about, in the context of sila, this other word. There are two words, samadana, the samadana sila, undertaking. And then there's another word which is spelled almost the same, sama, from samadhi, like sama with an H in it. So I don't know how even to pronounce it, samadana.
No.
Tana, samadhana. Are you familiar with
the same? I think. Samadhana, in Thai we use the word samadhana. Panatipata veramani sikha patang samadhiyami. Samadhi means samadhana. In Thai we simply say samadhan sin. But in Pali, I don't know whether it's changed a little bit.
So there are two words in Pali, because I checked at first, I thought it was the same. The first one, undertaking sila, is spelled samadhana, just D long A N A, and then the second one, which is
samadhiyami,
yes, spelled S A M long A D H long A N A, which comes from samadhi.
This is from the Visuddhimagga, and it's explaining about sila, and it says it is sila in the sense of composing. Silana. What is this composition?
Speech and deeds.
Doesn't mention speech and deeds.
So compose what?
A
And then the aspirate and these are there.
What is this composing? It is either a coordinating samadhana, meaning non-inconsistency of bodily action, etc., due to virtuousness, or it is an upholding upadharana, meaning a state of basis owing to its serving as foundation for profitable states. So it's the question of coordinating.
It's from the first part in the Sri Maga near the beginning.
Samadhiya means I, samadhan.
So samadhana as undertaking, and then samatana with an H. It says it's concentration, samadhi, in the sense of concentrating, samatana. What is this concentrating? It is the centering, adhana, of consciousness and consciousness concomitants evenly, samam, and rightly, sama, on a single object. So when it's with an H, samatana, it's either coordinating, etc. It seems to be referring to concentrating, samatana.
You mean sila?
Yes, so I'll just give you...
What about concentration? Ekakata chetasika arising with each chitta.
Right. So when it's referring to its virtue in the sense of composing silana, what is this composing? It's either coordinating samadhana, meaning non-inconsistency. It's not the undertaking samadhana. It's this one, the concentrating samadhana. So it's either coordinating samadhana.
So when we read all of this, what do you think about sila?
Well, I don't know when it says that sila is either a coordinating samadhana, which means concentrating, meaning inconsistency of bodily action. So it means centering or applying evenly. So then it would mean that it's sila, I suppose, accompanied by samadhi.
This is not about killing.
This is
another kind of sila.
No, this is. I think we should start by maybe for tomorrow getting the text.
Okay.
It's in the Pali samadhi. Not just only silas by samadhana. Many silas.
Yeah, so it's different.
Patimokkha sila, indriya samvara sila.
This seemed to be at the beginning a general
sila.
General on sila, yes. So this not yet specialized, so it's in the beginning samadhana.
You mean that the explanation about sila.
Sila in general, yes.
In the beginning too,
yes.
In Visuddhimagga.
Yes.
Because it begins with one word.